Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
O'Reilly Auto Parts' new Brake Mess Select Pro brand raises the bar for the best aftermarket domestic brake pads and rotors available. For vehicle-specific friction formulations, Quiet Tech noise-canceling shims, and stainless steel hardware, choose Brake Mess Select Pro. Professional-grade brakes from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Let me tell you about Simply Safe. My listeners know I recommend Simply Safe, and I'm not the only one. U.S. News recently named Simply Safe Best Home Security System of 2023. Under $1 a day, less than half the price of traditional home security systems. Lock and unlock your doors, access your cameras, and arm or disarm your system from anywhere. Customize the perfect system for your home in just a few minutes. It's Simply Safe. There's two I's in there. SimplySafe.com/Adam. That's simplysafe.com/Adam. There's no safe like Simply Safe. Well, first half, lots going on. Doing some drinking with Dan Dunn. And, of course, comedy ensues. Gina Grad knocks it out of the park. And Bob Guccione Jr. and Daniel Cohen join us as well. Talk a little about Spin Magazine. First, tell you about LifeLock. April 15th, the tax deadline. It was pushed. They pushed it back to July 15th. But the extension gives more time for hackers to mine for your data and sell it. Do not look. It's easy for them. They don't want to leave the house. They don't want to get shot, break glass, get bit by a dog. They don't want any of that. They want to hack in to your computer, hack into your information, steal your information and sell it and make money that way because criminals are lazy. They don't want to take jobs. Every day we put our info at risk when we put it out there on the internet. LifeLock, the leader in identity theft protection, detects a wide range of identity threats like your social security number for sale on the dark web. Protect yourself with LifeLock, right, Dawson?
Known to prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, LifeLock can see threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
Just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from HDS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
The evil bitch that is coronavirus may still be raging outside, but Carolla Drinks is hard at work with another month of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month includes a Beard Bro beard-shaping tool to tame that unruly corona facial hair, and a Chew face mask so you can silently protest how f***ing stupid all of this is, a 6-foot premium beer bong by beerbong.com, so you can slug back a few cold, endless rants when the world officially opens up again. And of course, a bottle of your choice. We know times are tough, but we at Carolla Drinks are here to remind you to take a breath, have a drink, and wait for all this shit to be over. Mahalo. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, the founder of Spin, Bob Guccione Jr., and its editor, Daniel Cohn. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, Dan Dunn stops by for a whiskey tasting, and Dave Damashek's here for good sports. And now, we started today's show a little late because he couldn't get his mother off the phone, heaping praise on him for the new book. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but get him in to get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sharing the show. Right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
Handball, Brian.
Yeah.
I am tickled pink because I woke up this morning and I looked on Amazon and my latest book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, was number 2 overall
All right.
on Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't number two in, you know, conservative talk or political humor, like in it, in its subcategory. It was just number two overall.
Number two.
I was tickled pink. It was it's currently the 11th overall audiobook, and Amazon sold out.
Damn! Awesome. So, Mazel tov.
Quite a feather in your cap.
Yeah, it's be careful what you ask for, because now they're sold out. So
now you got to glue some more books together.
I know. Barnes & Noble is out of stock. Everyone is out of stock. So it's flattering, but please, A, get the audiobook, because yep, they'll never be sold out of the audiobook, but they're refurbishing as fast as they can, but please just order it and it'll show up lickety split. Also, the Kindle obviously is all digital, so you can get that as well. And I want to thank Hill Press for publishing this thing, because I hadn't written a book in 5 years, and I had a thought about writing a book. And it was sort of like, in 50 years, we'll all be chicks. I was like, nah, now's the time. I got another idea for a book. You know, the book business can be a little bit of a treadmill, which is sort of like the record business, which is you drop an album, it becomes really successful, and like my first book, and then the studio just wants to follow up, and then they want another follow up, and then you have to tour to support the follow up. And before you know it, you're just writing books one after, you know, you finish one book and you start another book. And I got off the sort of merry-go-round for 5 years and started doing that thing where it's like, well, I wasn't in the business of writing books anymore. I was writing a book because I wanted to write a book. So I hit up Mike Lynch, and we started kicking around the idea of writing another book. And when we decided to do it, I contacted my book agents, and I said, hey, go hit up some of the folks I was a New York Times bestseller with a few years back and tell them I'm ready to write another book. And they were a little less than interested in my fifth book. And I guess times have changed. Also, the only group that's probably more woke than the literary sort of publishers and Manhattan and all that, the only group that's more woke than them is probably Sundance and documentary film festivals and film festivals, Tribeca. These are the ultimate in woke.
You're SOL.
Yeah, I picked the great lane.
Right. So when it comes to putting one of my docs at Sundance, that's never going to happen. And when it comes to heading down in 2020 and heading into Manhattan and trying to get a book deal, that's off the table as well, which is sad, but that's our new world order. So I was sitting around in here and just to, some of you have heard some of this story, but it's just how it's got to go. So, and this is what I'm explaining to people over and over again. You know, everyone's talking about cancel culture and everyone's getting canceled out. And I'm like, that's why I'm sitting in the studio that I built that's inside of the building that I own. I'm doing this intentionally. I understand what's going on. I don't want to apologize and I don't want to get canceled. So that's why we're doing this. But I had gone out to all the major publishers, and again, these weren't cold calls. I had first look deals with my last publisher. We have a track record of selling a lot of units of books, and you know, three times New York Times bestseller list. So,
three times, fool.
No offers came in, and they were a little bit insulting, I would say, with some of their commentary about me and my ability to sell books. So to you, I say, kiss my hairy ass. Kiss my hairy ass. Because Mike and I were looking at each other, Lynch and I, and we're kind of like, we're a little down about it. Like, it doesn't feel good to announce to the literary world, hey, everybody, good news. Adam Carolla is ready to write another book after a 5-year hiatus. Let the bidding begin and have everyone get back to you and basically go, not interested. and not interested. And by the way, I got to tell you, in our new world order, you know, HBO doesn't just say not interested in your doc. They're fucking rude about it, which is
wow,
which is weird, but I get it. Fuck y'all. I'm doing my own thing. So I was sitting here about a year ago, probably, and I had a guest in on Take a Knee, and he'd written a motivational book, and he got paid, and it did pretty well. And when we were done, he said, "You should do a motivational book." And I said, "Yeah, well, I'm trying to do a book, but no one wants my book." And he said, what do you mean? I brought my publisher with me, or my basically broker who found me the publisher. And I just walked right out. And I don't do a lot of soliciting, but I just said to this woman, "You got this guy a book deal?" And she's like, "Yeah." I said, "Could you get me a book deal?" And she said, "I think I could." And I said, "Good. Give me your number. Give me your email. I'll hit you up." And
for a guy who hates driving all over the Southland, Santa Monica, Century City, Culver City, this is the best possible meeting for you.
I know.
Walk around, take a left.
It was 18 feet from here in the lobby. They were walking out the door. But the point is I initiated it. I stopped them and I said, "I'll write a book. Can you get me a book deal?" And she said, "I bet I could get you a book deal." And then she walked out. A couple of emails later, next thing you know, book deal. Next thing you know, waking up this morning at the top of all the charts. I mean, number one in self-help, psychology and humor, number one in motivational self-help books, number one in political conservatism and liberalism, number one in personal success, political humor, number two, number one in, I already did that one. Let's see. It's all on top of the charts, and they're having to reprint them and frantically get them out to Barnes and Noble and Amazon, everything else. So thank you guys. Leave a review. Fuck you very much to the industry that decided they were too woke for my jokes. And this is the new world order. This is how we have to do it, because the other way isn't going to work. And it's only going to work if people who are listening go out and support it. So thanks, Post Hill Press and Anthony Zaccardi. Yes.
I can't help but think of some woman of a certain age, I don't know, maybe my age, all frazzled, crying, maybe going through a breakup, living with the cats, walking into Barnes & Noble going, "Hi, do you have anything new in self-help?" And then handing them your book. Okay.
Self-help. It's so weird for the legacy publishers to be, I mean, it makes sense, but the hubris, like, the Post Hill Press, there's got to be 1,000 of them who the pipeline used to be so narrow to sell books. You know what I mean?
Right.
Got to get in the right stores. Got to get on the right display. Got to go. Nowadays, everyone just goes to Amazon or God knows where they go for books and audiobooks. And the pipeline's been burst open. It's so weird that they have that like sort of residual hubris about themselves.
Well, maybe in a way it's them exercising the last of their power. This is the last time they can flex this power muscle. I'll tell
use it.
Three-time New York Times bestseller author Adam Carolla to go pound sand, and that'll be it. And then after that, we'll be obsolete. Let's see. Dan Dunn's going to be in a second or zooming in a minute. We're going to test some of these fine whiskeys. First, let me talk to Jeff. Jeff 38, Turlock, California. Jeff?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Good. What's going on?
Hey, I was just wondering, I know you watch Bill Maher, if you happened to catch him interviewing Killer Mike the other day.
I was on the road last week when Killer Mike or Bill Maher was on. So I usually will catch up. I have not. I actually was looking for it the other night. I wasn't able to find it in my queue, but I got distracted. But no, what did Killer Mike have to say?
Oh, Killer Mike's talking, and, you know, he's doing, obviously, he's got his narrative, but he's a big gun owner, and they talk about guns, and he says how him and his wife each have an AR-15 on each side of their bed, and whenever they travel, they have guns in the center console, and he says, you know, because when you're high profile and you got money and stuff, you never know if someone's going to try and rob you, and if you have to protect yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And
no, I saw
say,
that.
And I, want to say,
I saw that.
And I want to ask him, from who, Killer Mike? The cops? Who is it you're protecting yourself from? Who is it that might rob you because you're high profile?
Right.
You know, we blame the cops for everything, and it's all the celebrities and the politicians. It's how come no one ever asks them one simple question? Why do none of you live in these poor neighborhoods of color? Is it because you're scared of the cops, or is there another reason?
Well, Les, I've spoken about this quite a bit, which obviously then gets me out of Sundance and gets me out of the publishing world in Manhattan. So we all know my thoughts on this. The part where you move out of the neighborhood, I don't live in North Hollywood anymore because I'm rich. You know what I mean? That's a white black thing. That's, you know, it's like OJ's turned his back on the hood. He's living in Brentwood. Yeah, he is. Would you want to live in South Central if you were OJ? No,
just keep it real.
No, not at all.
Right. So, you know, I don't buy the criticism of moving out of the hood. Everyone moves out of the hood. White people move out of Kentucky when they strike it rich. You know what I mean? Or wherever the poor people were. You know, my dad's shack in North Hollywood. I live a long way from that beat up shotgun shack I grew up in, and intentionally so. But yes, obviously, black on black crime is a statistically a much greater issue for young black men, and the numbers are staggering when you break them down. But again, we're not interested in doing the math, and we're certainly not interested in doing that math, not in today's. That's the third rail. It's political suicide. Obviously, it doesn't help the problem to have everyone dance around it constantly. So you're going to exacerbate a problem, and then you're going to end up getting the cops out of those neighborhoods, and then you're going to get more people who you're trying to save killed. Consequently, unintended circumstances, I say it all the time.
Consequences.
What'd I say?
Circumstances.
Oh, unintended consequences. No, I wanted to
do
say
we need both.
If I said circumstances, I made a mistake. I mean, unintended consequences. All right, let's see. We got another question up there. Dan Dunn's going to be in a second. Oh, we got the audio clip of the book, Dawson. It's a minute long.
Yeah.
Guy can't hang with guy.
Yeah, you added to the list of people you can't hang out with.
Oh, I added to it.
Yeah.
All right, it's a minute 05. Here we go. What happened, guy? This guy drives me nuts. This is the person who sees your shattered smartphone screen and needs to know how it happened. He sees a cracked screen, and he's going to crack the case. What answer other than I dropped it is there? Am I supposed to reply? Mountain Lion, fended it off with my Samsung Galaxy. When there's a tale that involves a sniper's bullet, I'll tell you. But until then, assume it slipped out of my sweatpants pocket in the Ralph's parking lot and cease your CSI cracked screen investigation. It goes back to the victimhood thing. This guy wants to call attention to your misfortune or mistake so that you can join him feeling like an unlucky, downtrodden person. Is this going to be endlessly fascinating for him, or is it just schadenfreude? What information can he glean from this that makes his life better? None. So if this is you, move on, or I'm going to use my cracked iPhone to delete your contact and never speak to you again. Yeah, that guy. What happened to the what? How'd you crack the glass on your iPhone, guy? He's by the way the evolution of the what happened to the door ding guy in your car? Got that ding in your door? What happened here?
What happened there? Most likely, it wasn't in the car.
Yes, it's the same story. I went to the Costco. I came back 20 minutes later, and there it was.
Yep.
Thank you.
Case
Jesus
solved.
Christ. All right, let me hit quick Simply Safe. You shouldn't feel unsafe at home, period. And that's why there is Simply Safe. There I've been on a mission since day one to protect your home. And do it today. Get free shipping. Simply Safe. Two eyes in there. SimplySafe.com/Adam. All right, Dan Dunn is getting on the blower. It's not on it yet. Looks like Chris is talking to him. Porter, 49, Tennessee.
How's it going, Ace Man?
Good.
Double G and Triple B.
Nice.
I've been listening to you for, what's that?
Thank you.
Yeah, I've been listening to you guys since you started the podcast, the Podfather. But
thank
I have a
you.
Question for you, Ace, and one for Brian. The first one I want to ask you is, what do you think the over-under is going to be for Melania to file divorce papers as soon as he gets out of office?
Oh, man, there's got to be a line on that.
Oh, I should look that up.
Yeah, because the new news coming out is that when she said she had to stay behind to take care of Barron, when he moved into the White House, she was actually readjusting the prenup.
I heard that. Let me throw this out to everyone, because I had a related thought no more than 24 hours ago when I heard that news. I was like, is she going to fucking write like a tell-all book where she's like, I was a hostage, or I felt like a blah, 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 or I never loved the man, or whatever, you know, how they release the blurbs to sell books and it's going to be something extreme. Are we going to fall in line and be like, oh, poor Melania? Or are we going to be like, bitch, you got to fucking say something.
Right. Also, to all the women who marry the multi-millionaires that are, you know, 26 years older than them, it's a little on them, right?
They
know what they're getting into.
You made that decision, right?
Like, it's a trade.
Yeah, you're sitting around like, oh, he always uses the N-word and he's golfing constantly. Like, yeah, that's what you signed up
for. You got your citizenship.
That's what you signed up for. All right. So,
Ace, I wanted to let you know that I also I know your guy, Kelly. I used to live out in L.A. and I was at a restaurant. I do consulting for restaurants and stuff. So it was great you had Dan on, because I wanted to ask him if he knows about the Jameson Black Barrel, which is delicious. And
I have a bottle out of my bar.
Yeah.
So, I do. I was wondering, Bald, if you had any ideas about getting into that category for stunt work in either the movies or TV?
You have to rephrase that question. I didn't quite get it. Sorry about that.
How do you feel about the need for a category for stunts in the award system?
Oh, like for Oscar? I think it's overdue. I think there should be an Oscar for casting. Like, it is so hard to cast a movie well, and when it's done well, it's like, wow, I've never seen that person before. Where'd you find them? So, yeah, expand the categories. They already combined sound mixing and sound editing, thank God. Sorry, sound mixers and sound editors, but it was a little bit tedious. I think I should add a couple more categories, maybe stunt work and maybe casting.
There'll be pre-televised cast.
How dare you?
All right. Dan Dunn is ready to go with us. He's got many offerings here. Hi, Dan. How are you?
Oh, turn your mute off.
Colin Farrell looks terrible.
He really looks like Colin Farrell these days. Dan, can we hear you? Can you hear us? No, he's muted. Something is wrong.
Yeah, just run your cursor over the square and unmute. There you go.
Better?
There we go.
Now we're talking.
Yeah, what's happening, Dan?
You know, I went and got a haircut.
Yeah.
It looks good. You look like The Weeknd.
I'm trying to revert back, tap into my inner 22-year-old. Yeah.
Dan is a journalist and a spirits expert. You've heard him on this show a few times. What Are We Drinking with Dan Dunn? I've done a fun podcast to do. It's available on Apple Podcasts. So what do we got, Dan? What we doing, whiskey?
We've got a bunch of whiskeys with us today. I see you've got one right up there on the counter there, Adam. The first one we're going to do is a Dewar's, which we have had. We've tried Dewar's before on the show, but never this expression here, which is the double 27-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
So want to pour some of that in the glass here.
Adam loves her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a Dewar's, as you know, their master blender, Stephanie McLeod, very well known, very well respected in the industry. This particular whiskey is at malt whiskeys that are aged a minimum of 27 years. And then they're blended together. So This is a hearty whiskey. It's finished in sherry casks, Palo Cortado sherry casks, which is very uncommon for a whiskey. You don't get that a lot, and I think you're going to notice that when we try it. Want to take a little sip here?
Yeah, that's good.
Ooh.
I'm doing ice over here, Dan. Is that okay?
Max Pat, you got a funnel? Get this stuff back in the bottle.
Yeah, we'll drink it. We'll find something.
He's gonna butt chug it.
No, I'm just saying. I gotta do a bunch of interviews and stuff. If I was sitting home, I'd get lit with you guys.
But I'll pour smaller samples.
I gotta go to work. Yeah.
Dan, give me your thoughts on ice versus a little drop of water versus neat versus what do you like?
Well, you know, I always like to try it neat first. to sort of take the measure of the whiskey without any interference. Then water, almost any distiller you're going to meet is going to put a little bit of water in there because it opens it up. It mellows out the alcohol notes a little bit and it lets you identify the other flavors that are going on. But if I'm at home and I'm just sipping, yeah, I'm doing ice. I mean, I have a glass of ice right here. And I mean, this one's probably, you know, going to be delicious on ice as well. Adam, I know you like to know the prices on these things.
Well, let me ask this. A couple of drops of water, like how much water are we physically talking about? Like we don't have to do a ratio thing, but just literally a few drops to open it up.
Yeah. Honestly, when you go to a distillery, they'll have an eyedropper and they'll just take a little bit and put it in there because it has the effect of taking that alcohol sting out of it. Mm-hmm. Water just kind of, and makes it a lot more, it makes it a lot easier to identify the flavors that are going on here. Mm. And, I mean, this one is such an unusual whiskey. What are you guys getting there notes wise?
I am getting a very spicy note. That's what I'm feeling. Very spicy and very full bodied and robust. And like you're drinking whiskey. Like if you want whiskey, that's what you're drinking here. And that's how it plays to me.
I don't know if it's because you said it or not, but I can get the sherry cask. It's got that sort of, you know, dark wine finish to it.
Sherry, it gives a richness to it. Yeah.
Cask also sounds like the weather girl at an AM radio, like a radio station.
Hey, let's turn it over to Sherry Cask and see what's going on out there in the sky.
It is cold this morning. Red sweater.
Sherry, is it going to be snowing out there today? Should we bring our gaiters?
Woo! Make sure you get a poncho or something to throw over your neck.
Now, remember, you can find Sherry this weekend at the Bass Pro Fishing Shop. That's on the corner of Elm and Lucern. That's coming up.
I love to meet my fans.
Yeah, we're going to be you're out there with the boat displays, right?
I'll be there with the boat display, and every time someone says, do you come with this boat? I'll say, oh, you.
And Sherry, you'll be going at 12 noon to 3 p.m.? Sorry.
That's right, 12 to 3, straight up.
So it's a Bass Pro Shop that's on Euclid and 15th, I think, is where the brass. We got so many of them out here.
That's the biggest one. That's the one with three floors.
Sherry's also then, that's Saturday. Sunday's going to be at the Big O Tire Center. That's out in Upland.
That's right. There'll be a big tent in the parking lot. I'll be right in it.
She'll be there from noon to 3 as well. Big O Tire Center. I think they're selling off-road tires. And remember, when you ask if Sherry comes with a tire, her answer will be what?
Oh, you.
So, again, it's Bass Pro Shop. That's it's noon to 3 this weekend. And just go ahead and go online and find that. And then Big O Tire Center coming out after that. Sadly, on Monday, she's going to be in rehab. I don't want to give a plug for where that is. We're not going to expose the directions of that. But Sherry's got a little fentanyl problem.
But I will be signing autographs in rehab. Oh, you.
Remember, she'll kiss it all. She'll put the kissing potion on. She'll sign it. Oh, you. That's her signature sign off. And then she'll go ahead and back into rehab. So, Sherry, thanks for joining. And again, your signature sign off.
You.
All right.
And rehab, she signs it OD.
So this is delicious.
I was going to say, I don't know how to follow this.
All right, Max, man, I'm handing it back to you. Now, I have a problem. I can't waste anything, and especially stuff that's good, and especially stuff that's expensive. So get a goddamn funnel.
We'll do something.
Put it back into that bottle.
Also, before we get to the next whiskey, I got to thank everybody from the Whiskey X for hooking us up with these. Oh. Mighty fine whiskey.
Oh, yeah. I'm the MC of the Whiskey X. I probably should have mentioned that. Yeah.
But, when is that? Are we doing it live
we're not
or virtually?
Right now, you and I were going to do a couple of them, I think, and then, what happened.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping maybe, you know, the hope would be that at some point this year we get to do them. They're great events. I mean, we've already had five, I think, that we've had to postpone, but it's something to look forward to.
Yeah. All right, what's our next offering?
Okay, so next up we've got Bruichladdich. Look at the spelling on that. And I got to tell you, it took me a while back in the day I was like, what is this? Bruichladdich?
Yeah, that's tough.
Bruichladdich, which is a single malt scotch. It just actually got a big, there's a new thing that they have. It's called B Corp status, mm-hmm. which is a new thing they're doing over there in Scotland, that it's about your profit and purpose situation, where they really take care of their workers and their suppliers, their community. And this is the first scotch to get awarded that. Just happened about 3 weeks ago. Bruichladdich's on Isla. You guys might remember from when I've been on the show before talking about scotch. Isla is an island off the west coast of Scotland where the peatiest scotches in the world are
yeah.
made.
Now this one says unpeated. So is it not going to be peaty?
This is not going to be. This is not a peated one. And there's a couple on that island don't do it. But the next one, there's two we've got from Bruichladdich. One is unpeated, and the other one is heavily peated. This first one is the classic Laddie. Okay. By the way, one of the smaller producers on Isla is Bruichladdich, but it's the largest private employer on the island. So this one here, let me pour it in. Oh.
Yeah, this does feel a little peatier than the last one, although it doesn't feel peaty. It feels, it's a little thinner. It's a little lighter.
I'm getting lemon, honey, cherry blossom, a little bit of that.
Yeah. Well,
it's funny because when I smelled it, it has like a sour kind of like a sour fruit, like a stone fruit, but it doesn't taste sour. It tastes delicious.
Yeah, it's good. And I guess for me, it's a dark versus light. I tend to gravitate toward the darker ones more so than the lighter ones. But this is, so to me, the last one was like a wintertime whiskey, and this is more summertime whiskey, if I was to put it that way.
Ace, I think, I don't know about you, but I'm getting like the peaches to the fruit, the peaches, apricot. Yeah. There's like even a little like a fudge quality. It, when you say that, that's kind of what I'm getting. This kind of seems like if I were sipping a whiskey at a state fair, it'd be this, you know?
Well, this is summertime whiskey. It's poolside, I would say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sherry,
oh, Dan, give us the.
Oh, sorry. Sherry Peaches is also the name of our traffic girl. Who's Sherry is, there?
It is bumper to bumper out there.
Sherry, 405, I heard there's a mattress in Lanes.
There's some debris in Lanes. Yeah, it's a big, fluffy mattress.
Yeah, you a California king kind of gal? Are you like a queen, double? What do you roll on?
Well, everybody knows I'm the queen of traffic, but I like to really roll around, so let's go California king.
Sherry Peaches is going to be at the Big O Tire Center. I think that's noon to 3. That's in Upland, California, I believe it. I think it's in Upland coming up. She'll be out there, so come on out, get a beer koozie, say hi to Sherry Peaches over there.
And then I love Sherry Peaches. I might go out there and say hi.
She's going to be... Wait a minute, you are Sherry Peaches.
Who the fuck's the other one?
The other one is Sherry Cask. Sherry Cask. Sherry
Cask. We're just going to put this down for a hot second.
Gina's lit. She's getting her characters off. Sherry Cask?
Yeah.
Sherry, all right. I think we're going to have Sherry Peaches and Sherry Cask out there at the Big O Tire Center in Upland. Sherry Peaches, you going to be out there?
Oh, yeah. And you know what my sign-off is?
Mm.
Oh, you.
And Sherry, I don't want to start an argument, but that's kind of Sherry Cask's calling card. She does...
No, in her defense, it's very different. Mine is, oh, you.
Oh, she doesn't do the laugh afterward. All right.
Yeah, mine is, oh, you.
Oh, that's
a little different.
Sherry Peach and then Sherry Cask is...
Couldn't be more different.
Sorry, what was Sherry Cask again? I'm sorry.
Oh, you.
All right, so that's a Big O Tire Center in Upland. Look, it says noon to 3. I'd get there before 11 because they're going to line up. You got calendars, headshots, beer koozies, keychains. It's all going to be there.
And there might be a kissing booth.
Oh, it's going to be a little Sherry on Sherry crime over there. And then again, after that, it's off to the Bass Pro Shop, and that'll come up on Sunday again, noon to 3. Sherry Cask, Sherry Peaches, thank you very much. We'll be back
thank
with traffic,
you.
weather, traffic news, and weather traffic after this.
Mm-hmm.
Right, after listening to the Sherrys, I don't know if it's appropriate to bring up the fresh, ripe fruit that I'm getting.
Oh, please do.
Brian, if you're going to do the fruit, try not to make it too offensive.
Yeah, sorry.
If you're doing a fashion report with Brian Fruit, everybody. Okay. All right. Sorry. What's our next one?
Okay. Same distillery, Recladi. This one's called Port Charlotte, heavily peated.
Ooh.
Heavily peated.
Peat is, you know, the natural, it's basically grass bog that grows. The whole island of Isla is basically one giant peat bog. They take it, they dry it out. They use the peat to smoke the barley. The barley is the starch that's used to make the scotch. That peat permeates the barley, and that's where you're going to get that really smoky quality to this.
This smells like charcuterie. I love it. Mm.
Heavy, yeah. By the way, Heavy Pete rolls with Killer Mike when they go into the hood.
Yeah, they got AKs.
You better keep that Glock right in the glove box when you're rolling with Heavy Pete and Killer Mike into the hood. This is peaty, but I may have to change my tune on the peat here. Let's see.
Ooh.
So this one's got, again, I think there's like a vanilla thing. There's some ginger, some nutmeg. There is a spiciness. So I think what Gina was saying about the charcuterie, kind of that, like maybe even that this salami type thing.
Yeah.
Smoked meats. There,
you know, salty. Yeah. There's a saltiness. And by the way, this is right on the ocean. And that ocean influence really... It can be experienced here in the whiskey as well. So
holy hell!
Yeah, this is what I'm drinking after the Christmas party. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like cold night, lay, winding down. This is flavorful and rich.
Question about this from somebody who knows very little about alcohol. Would you? And maybe Brian would want to weigh in on this because I know that he's a fan. But
I'm an actual expert here. Don't talk to me.
Well, no, just because I know you like it. But I'd love Dan's opinion. This is almost like what mezcal is to tequila. This is the very heavy, smoky, full body.
That's a really good analogy, actually, because the tequila would be this one, the classic Lottie,
right?
Unheated, exactly right. And then Port Charlotte would be the mezcal. And you know, the difference is, you know, where that came from, and again, stuff we've covered on the show before. But you know, mezcal. The reason mezcal happened was they used to have to bury the agave underground to bake it to hide it from the Spanish government, because they were to hide it from tax purposes. And what ended up happening was it was a happy accident, was all of that smoke got captured into the mezcal, into the agave, the piñas down there. And that's where that came from. So yeah, that's a great one. This would be the classic Lottie would be your tequila. The Port Charlotte would be your mezcal. What is Port Charlotte's job on the newscast that we're in? Should we keep going with the Charlotte thing?
Yeah, I think we should. Hold on.
The cast is out of Port Charlotte.
I got a troubling text from Chris Laxamana. Heavy Pete was shot out front of the Peterson Automotive Museum two nights ago.
Yeah.
I didn't know that after an event.
He's a big target.
And they've no suspects so far. So
didn't see that on the wire.
That's on a sad note. I did not hear about that. But there's all the, you know, Black Lives Matter and the COVID-19 and everything in the news. I guess I just missed.
To Heavy Pete.
Yeah.
To Heavy Pete. Come on, bottoms up.
Don't pour one out.
I'm sorry. What was the name of the port? What was
Port Charlotte.
Port Charlotte. Sounds like an indie band. I'll try to work with it. Dan, let me explain the artistic process. It can't be forced or foisted upon one. It must organically grow up, like the agave that was baked in the soil. There's a steeping process. You can't just swing by and throw a premise at me. It has to organically grow within the podcast. I appreciate what you're trying to do there. But
it was the whiskey. It's the whiskey talking.
There's a process here, much like
no pimping.
Yes.
Respect the process.
Hey, by the way, anybody else thinking this? This whiskey would be fantastic with oysters.
Mm. Ooh.
Right? Like that. Oh, man.
I also, would say that if you are bringing a whiskey to a party and you want to kind of start a conversation, and maybe it's a place where you know other people are going to bring some decent hooch, bring this one. It's a conversation.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It's a good looking bottle. I mean,
Were we going
to? It looks like an old timey potion medicine bottle.
Were we going to discuss prices? I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Well, I do you want to? You want me to? I know sometimes, Adam, you like me to do that at the end, or do you want me to?
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll do it at the end. Sorry. Go ahead.
Got a couple more.
Okay. Next up, is a whiskey called Westland, which I got familiar with a couple of years ago. Excuse me. Westland is from the Pacific Northwest, founded in Seattle, Washington in 2010. And it's a small craft distillery, but it very quickly vaulted to the top of the pack of American whiskeys that of note. Critics loved it. And it's become a very, very sought after whiskey here. So,
all right, so let's try it.
Interesting smell. It's a different smell than the others.
Wow. Yeah. This is very, does start very different, right?
I like almost like pickle and, cornichon.
Mm. Yeah. Again, of course it's not scotch. So that's the first thing. We're not drinking a scotch here.
It's herbaceous.
Yeah.
Herbaceous. So, I don't even know what that means, but it, I
smells
like
of
it.
Herbs. Smells of herbs.
Oh, herbaceous. Oh.
Yeah, most positive. I could have got that wrong.
Basil, oregano.
Don't make me defenestrate like you, Brian. I'll throw your ass right out of a window.
So this was the American single malt. This is also distilled from a malted barley, same as they do with scotch. They are mimicking a lot of the methods of scotch. But I think what this distillery is going for is sort of that coffee and beer culture as well that they have in the Pacific Northwest. So they're trying to, you know, there's a hip thing that surrounds this whiskey. I mean, Adam was talking about stories when you bring a bottle to a party. This is one of those ones that I think, because it's marrying the traditions of Scotland, but with a new innovative take on it.
And you're okay with that? There's nothing precious that we should be saying, oh, hell no, we don't like that it's made in the, you know, it's made here, you know, it's made in the Pacific Northwest.
Absolutely not. No, I mean, drink what you like. You know, that's my thing. And obviously there are spirits that have a great tradition, been around for a long time. I love that. We've had a lot of that on the show. But then these newer ones, if they're doing it right, and these guys are doing it right, yeah,
go for it.
I could drink this. I might drink it all day.
After yeah, this one finishes very nicely. It finishes like in a weird way. Some of them finish on kind of an up note, like a little bitter, a little tangy, a little zesty or something. This one sort of coasts to a stop. Like it finishes smoothly. I don't mean that in a negative way, coasting to a stop. I just mean it doesn't finish
soft
up.
Landing.
It kind of finishes down. Yeah. Like it doesn't leave that taste in your mouth.
I can tell why you like it, Adam. One of the tasting notes, Rainier cherries.
Oh, I love me a Rainier cherry.
Dan, tell me if I'm insane. This is like a little like a fennel, like black licorice almost. It's got that sort of
yeah. Black licorice. No, you're insane. No. You're insane. Gina?
Yeah, well, like Brian said before, herbaceous, though I feel like an asshole saying that.
it's a new word.
Like I said, when I first smelled it, it kind of briny, pickly, a little bit sour. But the taste very like oregano, basil, like all these like almost, you know, Italian flavors that I love. Very, very interesting. Not what I expected.
This is the beauty of tasting these things is it. Everybody can get different things. And I don't think it's ever wrong. Like what you're talking about, this brininess, I'm getting something completely different. I'm getting like, you know, the graham crackers with the chocolate on it.
Yeah.
Yes.
This reminds me of that.
Oh, boy.
You know, chocolate color. Yeah. Like that sweetness and richness to it that I'm, you know, but that said.
Mm. Yeah. Good.
Delicious.
Mm.
All right. We have one more.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Hide maze.
I love this part of it when we do these segments. It's like, what?
What? Okay. What's going on?
Clyde Mays. Clyde Mays is a very interesting whiskey. It's an Alabama-style whiskey. And what that means is that at the end of the process, there was an actual Clyde May. He was this famous bootlegger. He would add dried apple slices to the barrel at the end of the aging process. So that's gonna do something really interesting here. And as I said, he was known as the most wanted moonshiner in Alabama back in the mid 20th century. And this thing didn't actually make this legal until 2001. They started making it legally in 2001, the Clyde Mays.
This smells heavenly.
Yeah, this feels more basic, a a little less complicated than some of the last few offerings, and just kind of whiskey, as you know, when you're looking for whiskey and you have that picture in your mind of that's what I want, this is what this delivers, with those notes of apple as well.
Apple, there's butterscotch, I think there's some caramel in there. This is buttery. What'd you get, Brent?
Buttery. I don't know if my palate's ruined from the last four, but this is buttery almost to me.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what it is. This is a, again, I'm using the term rich, but this is a sweeter whiskey than the ones we've had. So, Pete, you know, it's a Southern whiskey. You know, people like things sweet down in the South. And this is kind of the one you maybe put a little ice on it. It's a good, sweet, smooth sipping whiskey.
This is a crisp night on a porch. This is so delicious. And it does have that sort of like cinnamony apple, like yummy, warm notes.
Mm. Sherry Cask, you ever made love on a porch?
I've made love on a porch. I'm like Dr. Seuss. I've made love on a porch. I've made love with a morch. I've made love inside a porch. I've done it next to a torch.
Hey, yeah, Sherry. Dr. Seuss, he actually rhymes things that exist. I don't know that a corch and a torch and a sword.
Are you telling me you've never tried making love with a corch?
No,
I'll get you a promo code.
The day is young. Thank you, Sherry Cask. Yeah, this is good, basic, again, straight down the middle and solid, but sort of not the conversation that some of the other ones have been. If you went to the party and you were bringing something, this would be just a straightforward version.
This is
whiskey.
A tried and true, crowd pleaser.
Bring this to the barbecue. You're going to summer barbecue at some point, God willing, next year. Bring this.
Hey, Dan, we're up against the time here. So why don't, instead of us doing our guessing game, because I think we love all these things, why don't you just go through the price points order of appearance?
So the doers, the double-double doers, as you can see, comes in a smaller, you can't see if you're listening, but it's in a 375 milliliter bottle. So it's a half a bottle, basically. 750 is the normal size. It's $120 for the 375. Wow. So this is,
holy hell.
Yeah, that's
pour it back, Loxamana. Pour it back.
Do not waste a drop.
Yeah.
funnel. The second one we had the two Brucellatis. The first, the classic Lottie, $63 a bottle. And then the Port Charlotte, which is the peatier one, is $73 a bottle. The Westland, the American single malt, is also $73 a bottle. And finally, what did we have? Oh, the Clyde Mays is $43 a bottle.
Yeah, that seems about right. It all seems about right.
They're all so different, and you can't go wrong with any of these. There's such wonderful different kinds of choices. Thank you so much.
Hey, I want to tell everyone, if they'd like to get any of these or try any of these, and I suggest they do, they just head to Caskers, CASKERS.com, Caskers.com, and you can give any of these things a try. Dan Dunn, What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn, available on Apple Podcasts, and the book, American Wino, which I have read and is very well crafted, available on Amazon as well.
Oh, also, Adam, on Dan's podcast, the most recent guest, Phil Rosenthal.
Oh, the great Phil.
Feed Phil. And also, they're doing a live stream tonight, as you hear this, 9 p.m. Eastern on Flaviar's YouTube channel.
So check that out. Dan, thank you very much for joining us. Always a pleasure. Always a delight. All right. Let's see. Bob Guccione and Daniel Cohn. Is it Cohn? Yeah. I think it's Cohn. Daniel Cohn and Bob Guccione are coming on next. They're getting Spin back up and running, and we'll take a quick break. We'll talk to them right after this.
Adam Carolla's I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, navigating our all-woke, no-joke culture.
I'd make a terrible Peloton trainer. They're supposed to be inspirational and motivational and can't be cruel. I would be the Arlie Ermey of Peloton trainers. I wouldn't even be on a bike. I'd be in a lazy boy, chain smoking, eating key lime pie and shouting, if this stationary bike was hooked up to a generator connected to the dome light of a 1973 Impala, it'd be dim, you bloated witch. I don't care how hard you pedal, cunt. You'll never outrun your horrible childhood.
Available now in all formats. Pick up a copy now at adamcarolla.com.
My words are funnier with a buzz. Bob Guccione Jr. is with us. Daniel Cohn is with us as well. The publication, of course, Spin, and we're bringing it back. Let's thank you for joining us on the show, guys.
Oh, pleasure.
Yeah, pleasure. Happy to be here.
Bob, and we'll get into Spin in a moment. Your dad, obviously, famously publisher, creator of Penthouse, one of the all-time characters in American history, right?
He was. Absolutely. I think he's one of the great characters of the 20th century.
Yeah.
Up with Walt Disney and Happy and a few others,
I mean, just
moved the needle.
Hearing that guy talk, seeing the big medallion hanging around his hairy chest, that guy, I just remember from my childhood or my younger days as being like a crazy all-time character. Everyone kind of remembers Hugh Hefner, but Hugh Hefner was the sort of soft, sort of well-spoken, sort of polite and public version of Bob Guccione. But where's your dad come from? How did that start? Who was he?
Well, he was an Italian-American, born in Brooklyn, painter, very excellent painter, impressionistic, surrealistic painter, who went to Europe and one day realized that the biggest selling men's magazine in England was American, and they hadn't even bothered to change the price. And so he said, well, I can do that. And he just decided on a whim to copy it and came out with Penthouse, which, of course, was a huge success in England, immediately outsold Playboy. And then he brought it to the States. He was a great man, my dad. I was very, very, very close to him at the end. We had a long separation. I think you know that, Adam, because I think I saw you during that period. And, very proud of him. He's passed away now. He's gone about almost 10 years.
Spin Magazine, 1985 is when it began. It was originally, let's talk about the inspiration for Spin in 85. What were the origins of that?
Well, it occurred to me that my generation and my friends were all listening to music that no one was talking about. And I used to have to drive up the east side of Manhattan to get out of the city because I could tune into a Long Island radio station that played the music I liked. I wouldn't go up the west side even though it was closer.
What were they playing in 85?
Oh, it was Depeche Mode, Tears for Fears, all that new wave English stuff. REM maybe just breaking through. U2 was an unknown band. The Replacements, all this great stuff that really started a movement. And I thought, when I was a kid, Rolling Stone meant a lot to the people just slightly older than me. It was a little bit older than I was. And I thought, I'm going to do that. So in a sense, it was a similar thing of like, well, I can do that, And the other thing was that I realized that the great thing about Rolling Stone, which is a great magazine, was a great magazine. I think it's failed a bit now, flailing a bit now. But the great thing about it was it recognized that there was an audience that didn't trust mainstream media, a young audience that wasn't sure of their place in the world or mainstream media's agendas, which were often quite conflicted. So Rolling Stone was very honest with the audience. And that meant they trusted the journalism that they received. So I thought, same thing with Spin. We have to be honest with the audience. We've got to tell them like it really is. We've got to speak in the language they understand. And we have to have a sense of humor about it and a bit of a reverence, a bit of a sense of humor about ourselves. And so we connected with the readers in a great way. And in our time, we passed Rolling Stone as the most significant music magazine of the generation. It was our generation. It was our time. And then I sold it in 1997 and didn't really think about it again for a long, long time until recently when the new owner approached me and said, hey, would you work with us? We could use some of that old flair and some of that old magic. And that was very appealing. Obviously, very flattering, very appealing.
Yeah. So, Daniel, you went to, were you USC grad? Yeah, went to USC. Yeah. Brian went to USC, master's in print journalism. You work for Rolling Stone, Vice, Playboy, LA Weekly, OC Weekly. I'm very curious as to what's going on with journalism these days. It feels, in many cases, sort of like the opposite of journalism. There's a few outliers, but in general, the mainstream stuff feels like they're picking a side, they're telling a narrative, and they're going down a path that has been sort of decided based on what side they're on, mostly politically. Do you have any, as someone who's had a lot of journalistic background, what are your thoughts on that?
I have felt and always will feel that you have to lay everything out for the audience to decide. You have to lay the facts as you see them. You picking a side, you know, just basically panders to everyone or to one side, and it demonizes the other side. And we're looking at the world right now, and we're seeing the effect of that. When there's media needs to be there to kind of show the people what is going on. And it's up to the people to decide that. And that's something actually that we're looking to do also, is we're looking to, you know, not both sides. That everyone always is like, oh, both sides. But you know what? Everyone, you need to present the facts in a clear, concise fashion that shows something clearer that'll resonate with your audience. You just need to be as honest as you can with the audience. And who knows what, you know, some of the mainstream media's focuses these days. But that's what we are doing. We're just focusing on just giving people information. It's up to them to decide.
Well, I feel like if you are a person that dispenses information, and I always kind of think of folks like Bill Maher and guys like Mark Garagos. Mark Garagos and Bill Maher say things I disagree with, and then they say things I do agree with, because they're being intellectually honest. It's not really about right or wrong. If anyone watches Bill Maher's show, he'll say a bunch of stuff you may disagree with, and then he'll say a bunch of stuff you do disagree with. But either way, you go, that's his opinion. You know, when you talk to Mark Garagos as much as I talk to Mark Garagos, that guy's all over the road on, you know, every different subject, but you know it's his opinion. And I don't think we're asking to have an agreeable opinion. I just want to know it's your opinion. That's where we're losing our connection. So if you're going to print a magazine, a newspaper, or do cable or network television, I just want to know that's what your opinion is, and then I'll kind of decide whether I agree with it or not. I don't want to feel like it has an agenda. And I think ultimately a lot of these news outlets are going to hurt themselves big picture with what appears to be an agenda versus their opinion. And I think the voices who give their opinion and consistently give their opinion are the ones that are actually going to benefit during this weird time we're living in.
Yeah, it's certainly a weird time, that's for sure. It's one of those things, like you said, it seems like these days everything is inherently biased one way or another. But like you said also, like with Maher, you just got to own it. Just own it, let your audience decide whether they agree with it or not. In England, as Bob could probably attest also, with all the newspapers they have there, you know what you're getting when you open up a Daily Mail versus a Guardian or the Times of London. You know what kind of bent you're getting, and you're going to read that paper because – for whatever reason, whether it's contrarian opinion or whether you agree with it or want the echo chamber, it's there for you. And Bob, you could probably add to that too.
Yeah, I would. That's a good point, Daniel. I think the problem with media today, Adam, is it's too tribal. That's the problem with the country, by the way. Sure. 80% of it is tribal. There's only a small margin in the middle that's actually open to changing their mind or new thoughts or to new people. I think another thing that has to be said is the media has to be bold. It has to have courage, and it's lacking that right now. And I grew up, I've been in the media 45 years, and I grew up in that golden era of magazines when magazines had opinions, they took positions, they fought for things, they went to court, they got in trouble. I did all of those things. I got to court, in trouble, a lot of attacks on my publications because we took a very bold stand, some of it from the left, some of it from the right. But I think we're missing mostly, I hope Spin is not missing this. I believe we're not missing it, I should say. I hope you see that. But, and that's certainly why I was most interested in coming back to help these guys, is to bring that, you know, that boldness back and that gutsiness, which I think most of the media, especially the media aimed at youth culture, has abandoned. We live in such a woke time, such a politically correct time now, which I hate, I abhor, that we have lost our courage. And I think people want to know that you're being bold, that you're saying something that might get you in trouble. It might be unpopular. The truth is often unpopular, very often unpopular.
Are the publications in England even more divided than we are here in the States?
I think they are. I think they're actually, the left is more politically correct and the right is more, conservative and stuffy and traditionalist. There's very little in the middle. And unfortunately, especially TV news, whips people up into a frenzy of anger and hatred, and then plays to that. I'm very disappointed, for instance, with the media. I normally watch CNN and MSNBC because I think they're whipping up. It's a panic porn we're living in. The whole coronavirus thing was a panic porn. Now we're in the riots panic porn. And the right side, which is manipulating images and videos, you know, on Fox, they're whipping it up the other way. That the, you know, crazy left is tearing America down. So we need some moderate thinking in there. And someone has to have the courage to be moderate, which means sometimes on the left you say the right is right, and sometimes on the right you say the left is right.
Well, you know, I always talk to Dr. Drew about this, and Dr. Drew has a great concern about this subject. And I tell him, you know, he gets angry at the news outlets. Why are these guys panicking these people, or why are these guys underplaying this? And I say, I don't blame them, because as long as it's a for-profit endeavor, as long as they're trying to make money, then, you know, nobody makes a lot of money saying coronavirus is an issue, it's serious, but, you know, if you're under 70, you're probably going to be fine. And, you know, it's hit the nursing homes the hardest, and people with pre-existing conditions. And there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to go outside as long as you sort of mind the rules. That doesn't sell anything. You know,
I know, but it should be about selling, Adam, should it? I mean, not in the media.
No, but here's the problem.
That's a responsibility. That's a responsibility to be more accurate.
Yeah, but what you're asking for is kind of the impossible, which is you should be responsible and tone down your rhetoric, right or left, and you'll probably lose some viewers and lose some sponsorship and whatever, but don't worry, you'll have your integrity at the end of the day. Well, that doesn't work, the integrity versus the bottom line. What I keep telling Dr. Drew is it's not the news outlet's fault, even though it is, but they're going to follow the money. We can't blame them for that. It's our fault. We need to understand what we're seeing and what we're hearing. We need to tune into Fox for half an hour and then watch some CNN and then watch some MSNBC and spread it around a little bit. If you get sucked down one rabbit hole, you're going to get poisoned.
I think both rabbit holes are bad. I do that. I do watch a bit of Fox and then I watch a bit of CNN. And we could literally be watching about reports from Venus and one from Pluto. You know, it's that different. There's not even a connection. It used to be the right was slightly right of the truth and the left was slightly left of it. Now it's just completely 100 miles apart. And it's unrecognizable that they're talking about the same story.
But
I take issue because I understand, of course, the profit motive. I'm in the media and I want to make a profit. But I do think it's sort of like the product is integrity. You know, you can't abandon that. You have integrity. You say exactly what you feel. You do not get influenced by other people. And that's why your show is great. It's not true of, unfortunately, it's not true of the three major cable networks. And I think that is a problem. And it is also our problem to a degree society-wide because we're lazy.
Well,
that sort of thing.
I agree in what you say, a big picture. I think a lot of these outlets are going to hurt their brand going after the fast money, you know, the short money. You know, right. I think it's not going to look good for them. It's already, you know, I've been in Los Angeles my entire life. The Los Angeles Times is the paper of record for me. At any other time in history, if they would have printed a story and said, Los Angeles Times says X, Y, and Z, I would have went, oh, my God, that's exactly what's happening. I hear now I hear that and I go, let me check that out. Let me see. Let me investigate. Yeah. I bet that they've hurt their brand and they got paid, but they hurt their brand. But I think if you check in 5 years from now, it's not going to be good.
In what sense?
I think the damage, it's sort of like, I'll make a stupid example, but NASCAR was really popular in, you know, 2003. And so everything became NASCAR, NASCAR weekends, NASCAR after show, pre-show, you know, truck series, NASCAR. And it was so popular, but they burnt themselves out And then we went through this whole decade of nobody's interested in NASCAR anymore because you found that you were getting paid, Fox, talking about NASCAR and running NASCAR. So you did everything NASCAR, and now we got burnt out on it. And I feel that's the same way with a lot of these news outlets. It's already happening. You know, when you hear something out of Fox or you hear something out of CNN, you go, let me investigate. I don't know if he really said that or did that.
Also, there's another problem. Social media is just so, you know, unfettered and unmoored. You know, there's no anchor of a sense of responsibility to the truth on social media and a lot of digital media. That the bar is now so low that even at the level CNN and Fox are going at, they're above that bar. You know, they're actually better than that crap.
Right.
But they're still crap. So I just think it's terribly disappointing, and I think it's terribly damaging. Because we have a very, very uneducated, uninformed public drifting into somnolence as we approach a very important election. You know,
and the louder and more uneducated, or sorry, the more uneducated, the louder.
Oh, absolutely.
So everybody who's on Twitter raising his voice. Himself a journalist. Yeah.
I said raising my voice, which didn't mean
but everybody who can tweet out their thought thinks that they are now a journalist.
Oh,
as well.
Absolutely.
And everyone's an op-ed writer and an opinion person, too, in that sense.
How does spin fit into all this conversation? How are they going to remedy this?
The thing is we're ramping up our culture coverage. In the past few years, we've gone heavily on music, and we're going back into culture, and we're going to feature those diverse voices that we were talking about earlier. We have a bunch of – we've been running some op-eds lately from musicians, and we have a couple of pieces Bob's been shepherding with some political figures and filmmakers that'll kind of – you know, it will have a bent, but it'll have a balanced bent because, you know, you have to keep people honest. And that's the one thing is when everyone has their echo chambers, no one's been honest with themselves, and no one's been willing to look themselves in the mirror and say, oh, look, I have a pimple. No one's like, no pimple. It's basically the emperor's new clothes effect. And that's what's something I always pride myself on. And actually, I did the same thing when I wrote about your patent troll thing forever ago, is that I had to try and find that patent troll guy. I never responded, but I still had to try, you know. But, you know, that's the thing. You got to at least give people a chance to put their crazy out there. And it's up to your audience to decide who's crazy and who isn't. And it's presenting information. And if we have these figures who are voicing their opinions, we have to be the first ones to say that it's not right. And that can be with music, sports, politics, culture, anything.
Well, thanks for writing about the patent troll all those years ago.
Remember that?
Yeah.
I have a follow-up question, Daniel. Is that the catch-22 of what's plaguing one of the things that's plaguing journalism these days, which is You don't have to, but the idea is to remain objective or neutral. But sometimes there's things that where you like taking the middle road is not, you know what I mean? Like should call out what is wrong. For example, the patent troll is like, okay, well yes, you could be neutral about it, but really this is ultimately wrong and this is not the way it should be. And that's what the courts ultimately decided. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but the thing is we laid out the facts that showed that, I mean, it was obvious that the guy's wrong and the information presented itself and showed that the person was wrong. But what I mean by both sides is like giving the person, you know, a chance to respond to something. It's like basic journalism ethics, stuff like that, that kind of has gone by the wayside. Because you see what people are being accused of stuff. They don't get a chance to say, whoa, 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 I didn't do that. How could you say I did this type of thing?
Well, that's why so many articles say that person wasn't available for comment because you had to try.
Absolutely. Right.
Yeah. And they often don't want to comment because they'll be nailed. Dan, can I add a point? I taught journalism for a year at Ole Miss, just as a sort of to get off of the treadmill of the publishing business for a while. I was invited to teach, and I went to teach. And I said to my students, I said, forget objectivity. Objectivity is not the point. Honesty is the point. That is the whole moral gold standard maypole you must adhere to till your dying breath. Honesty. Objectivity is ridiculous. That's a cop-out. In fact, you're paid for your opinions. You know, you're paid to go out and find out what you saw and what you think of what you saw. That's why people read you. Now, be honest in those opinions. Don't manipulate facts. Don't ignore facts. But this whole idea of balancing everything out to where the evil people get the same you know, moral equivalency as the good people. I was using an example in my class of when I was in Kosovo, and I saw the atrocities. I actually found the first mass grave in Kosovo, which I then turned over to the New York Times because you had a daily paper and I had a monthly magazine. But I found a few things like that, and I saw for myself firsthand the evidence of the atrocities the Serbs committed against innocent, unarmed civilians in Kosovo. And when I came back, I did a radio show with Michael Jackson phoned up. Adam, remember him?
Sure.
Still alive.
Yeah.
Still alive.
KBC, Los Angeles.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. It was on his show. We had Jonathan Alter from Newsweek then and me. And Jonathan Alter attacked me. He said, "You don't sound objective." I said, "Hell, man, I was there. Why would I be objective? I saw it with my own eyes. What's right. the point of being objective? I know what I saw. I'm being honest."
The thing now is people don't believe what their eyes are telling them. That's also a big problem. What's going on today?
Well,
there is fake news. I hate to give Trump credit, but there actually is a lot of fake news. Most of it's on his side, by the way.
I think it's a time. I'll try to go holistic here, but you know, you can wash your hands 15 times a day, and you can wear a mask everywhere, and you can never hug your kids again, or you could really work on your own immune system. And mm-hmm. I think starting from the inside out is a better way to go. Get strong, get healthy, get that good immune system. And you may not even know this thing ever passed through you. Now, that's a metaphor for, and I've always said, you have to kind of calibrate your brain now. You're not going to hear the news from Fox or CNN. You're going to hear their version of everything. You have to get to a point where you're calibrated yourself, where you hear stories and you go, why would he say that? Or that doesn't make sense to me. I mean, think about all the crazy claims you hear from one side or the other. You have to stop and go, I'm going to pass it through my own filter. And don't worry, I'm calibrated very nicely because I've been working on my calibration. Work on your calibration just like you work on your immune system. And then I'm going to be healthy and strong. And then when this thing comes to me, I can process it sort of from a place of knowledge or strength, not just get bowled over by it going, oh my God, I can't believe he said that. Or I can't believe, you know, like you hear the stories. You'll hear stories, and again, both sides, but you'll hear the cops in Atlanta shot a black man for sleeping in his car. And it's like, you'll go, what? They just walked up to the car and shot the guy for sleeping in his, he just went, pulled in the parking lot, went to sleep, and the cops just went and shot him. You have to think to yourself, wait a minute, there's got to be more to this story than just that. And you're going to have to do it right and left. It's going to happen all the time. And it is now going to have to be like a default setting that we all have. Because otherwise, you're going to get sucked right into it. All right. So let me give you guys a plug, by the way. You can check out Spin at spin.com and shoot them a tweet at Spin as well. Bob, Daniel, let's hook up. In, I don't know, in a year when Spin is taking the world by storm and reconvene on all these subjects.
Yeah, these subjects aren't going away anytime soon.
No, thank you, guys. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Adam. Great seeing you.
All right, let me hit True Niagen, and then we'll break and do some news. Heard about NAD boosters. Yes, from 40 to 60, humans experience a nearly 50% decline in NAD. Well, look, all you need to know about True Niagen is I was talking to Dr. Drew about it yesterday, and he said, oh, yeah, I've been on this for about a year and a half. And then Shannon Sharp, who I spoke to the other week, has been on True Niagen for quite some time. I've been on it about 4 months now. And look, you get older and your cells start to basically die. Well, that's the process. You need to replace those dying cells and you need something to boost them. And that's where True Niagen comes in. It is, it has NAD and the stuff has been tested. It's not a gimmick. It's not a sugar pill. Supports cellular defense and repair with True Niagen. And you can visit them online, TRUNIAGEN.com. Use the code Adam. Get $20 off any 3 month plus supply. It's a real product. It works. I'm on it. It is True Niagen. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back, do the news with Gina Grad right after this.